The chief has a commitment that will make it impossible for her to be here for the final cases this morning. She of course has read the briefs, will view the video of the oral arguments, and will participate in the deliberation on all of the cases that are left for this morning. The next case is Thomas Everett versus the State of Ohio. Ms. Masters.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Jeremy Masters. I represent Thomas Everett, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The appropriate triggering event for the 180-day post-conviction petition deadline under RC 2953-21.
Could you pull the mic just a little closer?
Is that all right?
Yeah, okay. That's good.
The appropriate triggering event is the filing of the written transcript. And in this case, that transcript was filed on October 15th, 2008, and Mr. Everett's petition was timely filed on April 8th, 2009. And in the present case, the state's argument in the Court of Appeals opinion contains two separate flaws, and each of those is independently dispositive in this case. First.
Before you begin, can you sort of define here what we have in terms of transcript? We have the video that was filed, and the written portion, is that the part that the attorneys ordered independently to be filed, or is this a record, a duplicate of the video tape that the court ordered?
This was requested by appellate counsel for the court reporter to transcribe the video into written form in accordance with Appellate Rule 9B. So first, the Court of Appeals' interpretation of Appellate Rule 9 is incorrect. While videotapes are adequate for purposes of filing under Appellate Rule 9 on direct appeal, when a certified written transcript is also filed, that transcript shall constitute the transcript of proceedings. Second, the text of RC 2953-21 must be given its plain meaning, independent of Appellate Rule 9, as a matter of substantive law in controlling the triggering event for the deadline.
Counsel, was there any argument made for delayed appeal given the confusion here that the court, you just didn't have a chance, they just kicked it out?
Correct, and Mr. Everett wasn't trying to argue that his post-conviction petition should be excused from missing the deadline. It's our position that he succeeded in meeting the deadline. Contrary to the plain meaning of Appellate Rule 9, the Court of Appeals in the present case held that the rule's provision that a certified written transcript is the transcript of proceedings applies solely to when that transcript is produced from a non-videotaped source.
Is there any appellate court opinion in the Second District on this subject?
Not on this precise subject of whether or not the post-conviction petition deadline is triggered by the videotapes versus the transcript. There have been opinions in the Second District that were discussed in the Court of Appeals, Carson and Jameson. And in those cases, the Second District did use the certified written transcript as the triggering date for the deadline and not the videotapes.
Has this come up in other appellate districts in Ohio?
No, Your Honor. This, as far as I know, the Montgomery County is the only county to consider the videotape as the triggering event for the post-conviction petition deadline, and the Second District is the only district to specifically rule on this issue. So the Court of Appeals held that Appellate Rule 9's provision that the written transcript is the transcript of proceedings applies solely when that transcript is produced from a non-videotaped source, and not to all cases and circumstances when a certified written transcript is produced. In other words, the Court of Appeals held that shall does not mean shall, but properly construed, Appellate Rule 9 means just what it says, that a videotape may be the transcript of proceedings subject to the filing of a certified written transcript, which is always the transcript of proceedings, and not the Court of Appeals' interpretation that the videotape is always the transcript, and a certified written transcript may be if it's produced from a non-videotaped source and if videotapes are not also filed.
Who is responsible for getting the actual written transcript?
The appellant is responsible.
Ordered up and taken care of. So how long could this go on?
In a
your theory of what happens if a videotape is forwarded, filed, that's it, until such time as the appellant decides you want a written transcript, is that right?
Correct, and the written transcript would be produced as part of the direct appeal, and would actually be some form of written transcript is required in a direct appeal. The videotape is not has been held to not be adequate for purposes of reviewing the merits in the direct appeal. So when that written transcript is filed, that would be the triggering event for the post-conviction petition deadline. Now, irrespective of the Court of Appeals' incorrect interpretation of Appellate Rule 9, RC 2953-21 must be given its plain meaning independent of Appellate Rule 9 as a matter of substantive law. And that discrepancy between the statute, which does not address the use of videotapes in lieu of written transcripts, and the rule led to the Court of Appeals' second mistake regarding the relationship between statutes and rules. If a statute conflicts with a rule of court, the statute will control for issues of substantive law. And statutes of limitations are matters of public policy for determination by the legislature as issues of substantive law. And a rule of practice may not be interpreted to alter a statute of limitations. The 180-day deadline for filing a post-conviction petition, which is a civil cause of action, is a statute of limitations and therefore a matter of substantive law. And in this case, Appellate Rule 9 may not be construed to alter the triggering event for that deadline. But that's exactly what the Court of Appeals has done in this case. They've held that a rule of practice should define a statutory term addressing a matter of substantive law contrary to the plain meaning of that statutory term. And that proposition is incompatible with this court's recent decision in Irwin, as well as with the concurring analysis in Hollingsworth, which was relied upon by the Court of Appeals below. And the court's preeminent concern in interpreting a statute is determining legislative intent, and the words of a statute should be given their plain meaning in order to affect that intent, because words used by the General Assembly are to be construed according to their common usage. And in the present case, the statute does not define the term trial transcript, so it must be given its plain meaning. And the language used by the legislature indicates the intent to use the written transcript as the triggering event. But the state and the Court of Appeals have ignored that goal of statutory interpretation and asked this court to look to a judicially promulgated rule to expand the plain meaning of a statutory term. But under the statute, a videotape is not a transcript. A transcript is a written record of proceedings. And the need to give the language its plain meaning is particularly salient in this case because the legislature used the term trial transcript twice in the same sentence in RC 2953-21. The first reference to a trial transcript is with regard to a direct appeal to the Court of Appeals, such as in this case. And the second reference in that same sentence is to a capital case directly appealed to this court. Same term, trial transcript, same sentence, addressing post-conviction petitions. But according to the Court of Appeals' reasoning, you'd have to look to Appellate Rule 9 to determine that that rule allows a videotape to be the transcript for a appeal to the Court of Appeals, but it also requires a written transcript to this court in a capital case. So according to the Court of Appeals' reasoning, the same term used twice in the same sentence by the legislature actually means two different things.
Would a real-time recording be any different, in your view, with the words printed?
Are you talking about a printed document?
A real-time recording.
I'm not sure how
audio visual recording with the words printed on it.
Like subtitles?
Yes.
Uh, That would not be sufficient, Your Honor, particularly in light of the fact that Appellate Rule 16 requires references to the record to refer to volume and page number as described in Appellate Rule 9B. I can't think of a manner in which you'd be able to refer to a particular page in the sort of subtitled video you're talking about.
What about a 9C statement? Would that qualify as a transcript?
I don't know if I'd call that a transcript. It would qualify under the rule for purposes of direct appeal for the court to consider the issues on the merits if the parties had agreed to that 9C statement. However, that situation doesn't squarely fit within the statute addressing post-conviction petitions. One court in Ohio, at least, which was not discussed in the briefs, out of the 5th District, State v. Gross, dealt with a situation somewhat akin to that where the statute didn't directly apply. In that case, a direct appeal was taken but voluntarily dismissed before the filing of the written transcript. And the issue was, well, when does the post-conviction petition become due in that situation? And the Gross court held that, given that posture of the case, that no transcript was filed and the appeal was dismissed, the best fit under the statute is to consider that appeal as never having taken place and allow 180 days plus the 30 days for filing an appeal, which is envisioned under the statute.
Thank you.
So,
what about the term certified by the reporter in Appellate Rule 9? I mean, we're really trying to determine what the trial transcript means for purposes of the post-conviction relief statute. It's not defined there. So the Court of Appeals, I think, reasonably looked to Appellate Rule 9, which uses that term certified by the reporter. If the videotape is certified by the reporter, that becomes the trial transcript. If the written transcript is certified by the reporter, that becomes the trial transcript. What does that mean in your view?
The certification?
Certified by the reporter, that phrase that's included in Appellate Rule 9.
Well, I think what it means in the statute is if the item in question is not certified by the reporter.
It's not in the statute, is it?
I'm sorry, the rule. If the item is not certified by the reporter, then it doesn't meet the requirements of the rule. The Court of Appeals misinterpreted Appellate Rule 9, irrespective of the statute. In this case, a videotape was properly filed under Appellate Rule 9, but a certified written transcript was also filed. And under the language in the rule, when that happens, that certified written transcript replaces the videotape. It shall constitute the transcript of proceedings.
So you're saying the 180, the time resets because the new written transcript was certified by the reporter? And although you might have a videotape that says it's certified as correct, we don't consider that because at a later date there's a written transcript certified by the reporter?
That's where the relationship between the rule and the statute comes into play. If I understand, Your Honor, you're talking about what might happen when a videotape is properly filed and nothing else.
Right.
That's a situation that isn't squarely covered currently by the statute and the rule. Of course, there has been a proposed amendment to the rule that would rectify that situation by requiring a written transcript to be filed. But in a case where a videotape is filed, certified videotape is filed, but no certified written transcript is filed, arguably the best fit in that situation, because the statute must control, because it's an issue of substantive law and the plain meaning of that statute requires its, the language in the statute must be given its plain meaning independent of the rule.
But it doesn't say written, does it, in the statute? It just uses the term the trial transcript?
Correct. But the plain meaning of the term trial transcript envisions a written document, not a videotape.
Okay.
But Rule 9 does specifically say written transcript. And it says in the written form is certified by the reporter in accordance with Appellate Rule 9B, such written form shall constitute the proceedings.
Correct. when a certified written transcript is filed, it shall constitute the transcript of proceedings, regardless of what may have been filed prior to or after that transcript.
Thank you.
In addition to misconstruing Appellate Rule 9 and the relationship between statutes and rules, public policy supports the use of the certified written transcript as a triggering event as well. And the state has argued that because Mr. Everett and others like him do not have a constitutional right to file for post-conviction relief, that these issues don't involve matters of public policy. That position is undercut by the concurring analysis in Hollingsworth that was relied upon by the Court of Appeals below. In Hollingsworth, the concurrence explained that the plain language of the statute controls with regard to the triggering event, that it required the trial transcript as the triggering event, and not the broader term record on appeal contained in Rule 9. In other words, the statute controls the rule. But the concurrence expressed concern regarding the outcome in that case, citing public policy considerations and potential due process violations in the outcome. So while the state has argued that these issues do not concern matters of public policy, at least the concurrence in Hollingsworth felt otherwise.
Thank you. Mr. French.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. On behalf of the state of Ohio, I am here today to ask that this court affirm the decision of the Second District Court of Appeals and find that when trial court proceedings are recorded by means of a videotape in a videotape courtroom, the 180-day time requirement for filing a petition for post-conviction relief under 2953.21 begins to run when, in accordance with Appellate Rule 9A, the videotape recording of proceedings is filed with the Court of Appeals. That is precisely what the Second District found, and that is precisely what Appellate Rule 9A provides.
Does it depend upon certification by the reporter?
Yes. Whatever medium that particular court uses, if that medium, be it videotape, be it audio recording, be it written stenographers, through a stenographer, whatever the official court reporter certifies under Appellate Rule 9 constitutes the record, or excuse me, constitutes the transcript of proceedings for purposes of the record on appeal. In this particular case, Mr. Everett was tried in a video courtroom. And in this particular video courtroom, there was no stenographer, there was no court reporter in the traditional sense. There was a person appointed by the court as a judicial assistant whose sole purpose is to operate the recording equipment to make sure that all the testimony is recorded and audible, make sure that the proper cameras are where they need to be, make sure that the exhibits are properly marked. She does not take stenographer's notes. She is not a stenographer. When the record on appeal is, when the notice of appeal is filed and the record is being compiled, that is the reporter as the term reporter is defined under Appellate Rule 9B. She then certifies the videotape as a true and accurate copy of the proceedings, files those with the court. That then, under Appellate Rule 9A, is the official record of proceedings.
From an efficiency standpoint, how long does it take to transcribe those tapes or discs or whatever and transmit them to the Court of Appeals for a trial like this?
In the Montgomery County Common Pleas Court, in the videotape courtrooms, there is no official court reporter within the court system who does the transcribing. It is appellate.
Well, when the videotape then is delivered to the Court of Appeals, how long does it take from the conclusion of the trial court proceeding to get a a video transcript delivered to the Court of Appeals.
The video transcript?
That's what you had here, right?
Yes. The videotape can take a matter of minutes. It is simply a matter of downloading the files off the computer onto a disk, making the proper notations, and submitting it to the court.
So that takes far less time then to get the record, and
yes.
And how do counsel access it for purposes of appellate briefing and the like of that?
The videotape?
Yes.
Much like they could obtain a written transcript, they request a copy from the judicial assistant, from the court reporter. She then provides them with a disk, an exact duplicate of the disk that she certified and filed with the clerk's office.
So is the briefing then done much more rapidly in the video cases as opposed to having a court reporter transcribe and then someone type that into a transcript and then file that with the clerk?
Traditionally, yes, because the record can be completed much much more expeditiously because we're waiting simply for the video.
We have a case here involving post-conviction relief.
Yes.
Had the appeal been undertaken in this case by the Second District?
Yes, the notice of appeal had been filed.
And had the transcript been utilized for purposes of appellate review of the conviction?
The videotape, yes, had been submitted. The record, the documents, certified copy of the docket and journal entries had been filed. The appellate rule 11B notification had been sent to both counsels indicating that the record on appeal was complete and that the 30 days for the filing of appellant's brief, that clock had begun ticking.
What is the purpose then of filing the subsequent written transcript 7 months later in this case? What was the purpose of that?
Under Appellate Rule 9, it provides that when the transcript of proceedings is in the videotape medium, it is counsel's responsibility to type and print relevant portions of the proceedings and attach those to the brief. Under the local rules of the Second District, they provide, rather than attaching what could be, depending upon what the relevant portions are, could be a voluminous amount of paper to each of the briefs, they permit counsel to file, instead of attaching it to the brief, file it with the court.
Is that prepared by a certified court reporter, or is it prepared by counsel from the certified video recording that was made available to
it, them? It can be prepared by counsel, him or herself, if they wanted to take the time and the trouble of actually typing it on their computer and putting a certificate, I hereby certify I've done this accurately. That typically does not happen.
In every instance in which a video transcript is provided to the Second District Court of Appeals out of the video courtroom, is there a subsequent written transcript provided to the appellate court?
Not always. In the vast majority of cases, yes. But the rules do not require it, and there are occasions when it is not. If, for example, it is a simple proceeding, say a plea hearing or a sentencing hearing where the transcript at best could be 10 or 15 pages, there have been occasions where counsel will take it upon themselves to have it transcribed and attached to the brief and not filed separately. But to further answer your question, in those cases where a full, complete transcript is prepared, counsel takes the disk and sends it to an independent transcriptionist service. And the Second District, in their rules, provide that counsel can do it themselves if they wish. They can have a secretary or someone in their office transcribe it. But there is also a list of approved transcription services that are under contract with the Common Pleas Court, and the Court of Appeals, who through experience have proven to be reliable sources and have agreed that they will give a volume discount, so to speak, if those in Montgomery County wish to send work their way. That is what happened in this case. The transcript in this case was prepared by not a court reporter, not someone who would meet the definition of a reporter under Appellate Rule B, but was an independent transcriptionist chosen by appellant counsel who certified it as an accurate, you know,
You're telling record. Me the original certification under Rule 11 had already been sent to counsel when the discs were filed.
Yes. So
this is just a supplemental written transcript.
A supplemental written transcript.
What is the legal significance of that document, a supplemental transcript?
The legal significance? I don't know that there's any legal significance to it. It is accessible to the judges on the Court of Appeals to access at their convenience if they want, but legal significance, I don't know that there's any legal significance.
They take those home at night and weekends to read them, don't they?
The judges, yes. Yeah, yeah. My understanding is, yes.
So, Mr. French, are you saying that in this case, we did not have a written form certified by the reporter in accordance with Appellate Rule 9B? That there was not a written transcript? I think we asked the other counsel, and he states that there was a written transcript prepared that was certified by the reporter. And so we are talking about a situation other than the video that you're talking about, because the rule says as hereinafter provided, other than hereinafter provided. And if you have this written transcript certified by the reporter, it seems to suggest that that then becomes the transcript of the proceedings. And that's the question about the resetting of the 180-day period.
Let me give two answers to that. The first answer is no, we do not have a transcript certified by the reporter, because the reporter was simply a technician who prepared the made sure that the videotape was working.
And you're saying under 9A it has to be the court reporter? The reporter. It says the reporter.
And then under Appellate Rule 9B, it defines who the reporter is, and among other things, it must be a person appointed by the court to prepare the official record. In this case,
you're saying these people that are contracted out by the court don't fall within that definition of 9B?
I would submit they do not, because they are not appointed by the court. They are hired independently by counsel.
To your knowledge, Mr. French, is this rule being currently considered for amendment?
It is being considered for amendment. There are various proposals. There are various comments being batted around. How the rule will ultimately be approved and written, my understanding is still unknown.
What were their considerations of this particular issue before us today in any recommendation for modification?
My understanding is that the proposed modifications would require a written transcript be filed in all cases.
Every case.
Counsel, to help us understand, if I understand what you've told us, that in the video courtrooms, of which there are many in this state, particularly the traffic courts and those kinds of things, that if an appeal to the Court of Appeals is undertaken at some point, the norm would be that the appellant's lawyer sees to it that there is a written transcript, whether it's done by private enterprise or an official court reporter, that a written transcript ends up in the case before the appellate judges have to consider it.
Yes.
Okay. And I assume that generally the lawyers who have to write briefs prefer a written transcript as well, that they're not sitting there doing their brief off of running the disk back and forth in their computer.
That's correct.
So if that's the norm in the practice, why should we tell a pro se defendant, and that's what this guy was when this is rolling, wasn't he, that you have to get your post-conviction relief request in 180 days from when a video that nobody else in the process is going to use isn't there a certain unfairness about that?
I don't know that there's a certain unfairness about that. And I say that for this reason. Post-conviction relief is dependent upon evidence outside the record. So in theory, having a transcript in whatever form would not necessarily assist an individual in filing for post-conviction relief because you're relying on items that are not in the record. So having the record would not necessarily assist.
So this debate is really about something that's off to the side. It's an interesting exercise here, but in terms of due process and fairness within the system to defendants for purposes of post-conviction relief, it all doesn't matter.
Yes, for due process arguments, for public policy arguments, it does not really matter. And as illustrated, and I see my time is up, may I answer? As illustrated in this particular case, the issues for post-conviction relief that Everett raised were that counsel failed to call a particular witness. He doesn't need a transcript to know whether or not a witness was called. He was there. So the transcript would be of no value to him in raising that claim. The counsel failed to gather phone records. Again, the defendant is in the best position to know what was presented and what's not.
But it is relevant for statute of limitations purposes or for the time within which that post-conviction relief document must be filed with the court. So it does have some relevance.
Yes, it has some relevance, right? But it has no relevance whether or not it's triggered
from
by
a substantive standpoint. It's not the content of what's in the record, but the date that that record is filed begins to trigger the 180 days within which the post-conviction relief must be filed.
Yes.
So that's the significance of which transcript we're looking at. Am I right?
Yes. But it is of no significance whether or not it is triggered by the video transcript or the written transcript. If the transcript, the actual...
The substance of it doesn't make much sense because this can be matter stay or the record.
Yes.
Counsel, how long does it take for the approved transcribers to transcribe a record? Now, I know they're a different length, but just some sort of a ballpark. Are we talking about days, weeks, months, multiple months?
Honestly, Your Honor, I sort of did a little bit of just punch in appellate numbers and see when videos versus written were filed. In the vast overwhelming majority of cases, they are filed almost simultaneously. The video and the written transcript are filed maybe within a day or two of each other.
I assume the commercial transcribers have pretty sophisticated equipment that they can move that process along.
They have very sophisticated equipment, and I think from a business standpoint, the more efficient they are, the more business they're going to get because that's preferable by counsel.
Let's go to the next step here then. This the written transcript or the, it's not really, I guess to not use the term that's in debate here, the transcribed copy of the videotape that's already been filed, when that is filed is somewhat is up to counsel, the appellant, right? As I understand it, is that we're talking about what triggers it. So there's nothing to prevent counsel unless they're going to rely on part of it in their direct appeal, from filing it 2 years later and have moved that 180-day limit on post-conviction relief at their will.
That is correct. That is a tool that, in theory, a council could use to manipulate the 180-day rule if we adopt what Everett wants us to adopt in this case. And interesting to note, while in the vast majority of cases, the video and written transcript are filed simultaneously, they clearly were not filed simultaneously in this case. And the written transcript in this case was actually filed in violation of Appellate Rule 10A, which requires that the record on appeal be submitted within 40 days. The video was, because that's the official transcript, but the written transcript was filed more than 90 days.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've used all your time, but take 30 seconds to see if there are any questions or.
Very quickly, I'd like to say that the need for a transcript on post-conviction is the requirement for Mr. Everett and others like him to demonstrate prejudice in the issues that they are raising off of the record. And that's why the statute uses the transcript as the triggering event. It's necessary to show what did happen at trial and to demonstrate that, given the new information off the record, the outcome of the trial, there's a reasonable possibility that it would have been different. Also, the transcript took 7 weeks in this case from the time of the videotape being filed to the time of the written transcript being filed, and that 7 weeks was the difference between Mr. Everett's petition being considered on the merits and it being held late under this interpretation.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Okay.